It's time now for hour number two of our big two-hour weekend get-together here on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. I am the anchor of the program. The host of the show is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick this hour off now with Carol Marks in conversation with Hugh Hartford. He's the director of a new British documentary, Ping Pong, airing on PBS. It's the stories of the men and women in the over 80 division of the World Veterans Table Tennis Championships.
Now, nothing, I believe, happens by chance. So how did meeting a seven-time world ping pong champ, Les Darcy, who then introduced you to Terry Donlan at their European Tennis Championship in Croatia, serve as a catalyst for making this documentary?
He was sort of the gatekeeper. For us, he was the gatekeeper into this world of table tennis, veterans table tennis. So it actually starts at the age of 40, and then the veterans, they split into age groups at 40 to 50, and it goes up in 10 years, and then when it gets to 80, it goes up in 5-year age groups. Les was 89 at the time, so he... And he was he'd been playing through the veterans and working his way up through the age groups for many, many years. So sort of, he was very well known. And as you said, he's got 7 world championships. So he knows a lot of the other players and also the people that are the very best. So a lot of the initial conversations with Les were about who's going to be good competition in the upcoming championships and who his rivals were. So we went through a big list and we were asking about, how's this person's game? How does this such and such a person play? His big rival was a man called Runa Forsberg from Sweden. So that's how we met Runa, and then we flew out to see Runa and filmed with him. So it sort of Les acted in that sense as a gatekeeper. He sort of introduced us to a lot of the people, and then in the film he acts as a guide. He sort of holds your hand and takes you around this rather remarkable world.
Now, how many people competed on the competition, and how many countries did they come from? And you have some translation in the film, so were there contestants who needed that?
So how many people? There was 3,500 altogether were competing, and that was in 2010. And it's been growing. It happens every 2 years, and it grows every time they have the event. There's more and more contestants. I think the following year, I don't know how many, but it was definitely more than 3,500. And it was in New Zealand, and then... Sorry, the one coming up is in New Zealand. And that'll be next summer. And the languages, so the number of countries, I don't know the exact number, but it was definitely, there were about 40 different countries represented. They had a big opening ceremony, and everyone walked out with the national flags of their country. There was at least, I think it was 40 or 41, I can't remember the exact number of countries. But so we had, when we were there, we had a translator to help with the Chinese, with Mandarin. So she spoke English, but there were also people there who spoke Mandarin and would translate into Japanese and then Swedish. But it meant that filming was a little bit tricky because we were actually having a conversation to 4 different people. So I would talk to our translator in English, who would then translate it into Mandarin, who would then talk to a Mandarin speaker who could speak Japanese, for instance.
Wow, a little bit challenging.
Before we could actually talk to the Japanese lady.
Yeah, I would say so. And I wanted to ask you, how many people did you start out filming for your film, and how many did you actually wind up with?
Yeah, so the Japanese lady is a good example, actually. So Rikima. So we filmed with her, and we kind of got around the language problem, but it definitely was that it sort of slowed us down in terms of how quickly we could sort of go through ideas and how quickly the conversation would go. But we filmed with Rikima, and then as the competition unfolded, we would concentrate on more and more onto our final 7 main characters. And so we probably started... We telephone interviewed maybe 30 people, and then from that we met up and filmed with about 14, And that 14 turned into our final 7.
Now, one thing I found that was, I thought, a little strange was that the over 80s World Tennis Championships were taking place in Inner Mongolia. So is it really popular there?
Yeah. So it's Chinese in the below 40 age groups. The Chinese dominate the medals table. So in the Olympics, it's very common to have bronze, silver, and gold going to China. So it's a big, big sport. And it used to be, they've actually taken the public tables away. But they used to, all across China, there would be outdoor public tables, so for everyone to play. But they've gone now. It's sort of considered old China, and the new Chinese is sort of moving away from that. But it's still a very, very popular sport. So Inner Mongolia, a lot of people, the stadium was full.
I noticed that in the finals. It was packed.
Yeah, with the spectators. So enormous amount of people would come and watch the games.
Now, Les, who was really the person that overseed and helped you out, Les Darcy, he was 81, and his doubles partner was Terry Donlan. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah, Donlan. Yeah.
And he had cancer, and how long had he been given to live? What kind of medical device did he have to use when he played ping pong? And my goodness, didn't he actually win a medal? I mean, it's such an inspiring story.
So Terry was 81 at the time. Les was actually 89, not 81, but Terry was 81, and they were doubles partners, and they've been playing together for many years, so they're very old friends. And then during the filming, Terry discovered he had cancer, but he's actually lived with various illnesses most of his life, including he had tuberculosis when he was quite young, and that's affected his lung capacity, and then which has slowly deteriorated, and so he plays now with about 30% lung capacity and plays with a nebulizer, so it pumps. So a breathing apparatus that helps how oxygen get to his lungs. He gets out of breath very quickly, which just means he sort of deals with it with a bit of tactics. So that with table tennis, you can actually introduce quite a long pause between each shot. So for instance, if the ball were to go off the table and it needs collecting from the corner, Terry would deliberately take a very long time to go and pick the ball up, so to help him catch his breath for the next shot. And then the more competitive opponents that he had would realize this and try and they would quicken the pace of the game and try and have as shorter gaps between each point to which I thought was quite mean. But I mean, it's just playing. It's all above board.
But actually, he did win that doubles medal, and I mean, that is so incredible that he was able to do that.
Yeah, and then to go on and win. No, it was amazing. And because we'd been filming with Les and Terry, probably the longest at that point, and so it would have been about 2 years that we'd been filming with them, off and on. And for Terry to win gold was a big moment for all of us, really.
You know, he's an example of mind over matter, mind over body, that it really can make a big difference.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. And he says it. He talks about it's the mind that controls your body. And I think they're all examples of that. But Terry says it explicitly.
That's Hugh Hartford in conversation with Carol Marks. If you want more information, go to pbs.org/POV/pingpong/ for local listings and dates and times in your area of the airing of that special on PBS. Carol Marks returns in just a moment with more conversation when A Touch of Grey continues.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it? Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is our host, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Nora Gallagher, a best-selling author. She can talk about her new book titled Moonlight Sonata at the Mayo Clinic, published by Knopf.
Now, in 2009, during a routine eye exam, you learned from your eye doctor that your right eye, optic nerve, was dangerously inflamed, and this was a condition that if left untreated could cause you to lose your sight. Now, what made you call your journey from a healthy, ordinary life into a totally different land that you called Oz?
Well, I think when you get sick, the way I got sick, that's entirely different from when you have a cold, you know, or when you have the flu, things you know you'll get over eventually. You don't realize until it happens that you literally fall into another country. There are several reasons for that. One is that, of course, you fall into the medical system, which we can certainly talk about, and I'm sure other people are familiar with what happens with the way you get sort of overwhelmed by the medical system. But more than that, as I was walking from my doctor to the emergency room where I had to get intravenous steroids, I felt as if a wall had descended, a glass wall had descended between me and the people on the street. And part of that was because they were going on with their lives, as if nothing had happened to me. It's a shocking reality that life goes on in a kind of casual, oblivious way when you yourself are suffering. And of course, there's not, you know, this is not to blame everybody around you. They don't know what's going on with you, but it's a shock that you are suddenly, your life has suddenly stopped and everyone else is going forward.
And they don't know what you're going through now.
And of course, you don't know what they are going through.
True.
And finally, I think that heart of the matter, which I think might help people who are dealing with someone else who's ill, is that many people, many of us, don't believe that anything will ever happen to us. Deep in our hearts, I mean, if you'd said to me before this happened to me, you don't think that anything terrible is ever going to happen to you, I would have said, oh, no, of course not. I know that something will happen to me. But we actually think that we'll be able to avoid it. And so what helps, it helps that separation that people feel, that feeling of being in another country, is if other people admit to themselves that, of course, something will happen eventually to all of us. And that's
very, very true.
To take in.
Now, you found yourself, you're being treated for a baffling illness, and in today's fast medical world, rather than the slow medical world that I grew up in, and you probably did too, doctors used to practice so that they spent the time with you and they got to know you. And do you think that's why fast medicine is so impersonal, that you often feel you're just a number in an automatic check system?
Yes, I think the whole idea of slow medicine, which is not my term, but is a term that Victoria Sweet in the wonderful book God's Hotel has really elaborated on, is the daily, in her case, the daily observation of a patient. And in our case now, in this world, there's almost no observation of the patient at all. It's all about tests. I went to a great doctor who, at some point, one of the tests I had, which was a lung biopsy, caused my lung to collapse. And a doctor had to put in a tube in my chest wall to let the air out, and finally he had to remove that tube. And he said to me while he was removing the tube, "So tell me what happened to you in the emergency room." All I got were the results of tests. He said, "I used to get the notes from a doctor about why the patient was there and what had happened and who they were and what their story was, and now I get the results of tests, and so I have no idea what happened to you." And he said, "I think that medicine has lost its narrative." And I thought that was a wonderful judgment.
I couldn't agree.
Really,
so much, and it's lost its heart.
Yes, and it's lost its heart, and it doesn't mean that doctors have lost their hearts. I think that's the important thing. But they're, in many ways, they're caught in a system as much as everyone else.
That's
crazy
also
system.
That's also true. Well, finally, Nora, after 10 months of all kinds of tests and all kinds of doctors, you wound up at the Mayo Clinic. And before we talk about your positive, eventually, medical experiences there, you had a unique experience when you walked into the atrium of the Mayo Clinic and you saw a grand piano, and it turned out to be one of your most lasting memories, and it wound up in the title of your book, Moonlight Sonata of the Mayo Clinic. So tell us what happened when someone played the piano, and what did it make you realize? What was that whole event all about?
Well, at the Mayo Clinic, for those people who've been there and for those who have not, it's about 1,000 people a day come through its doors. So the atrium that is a kind of entryway is about 2.5 stories high, and it has on one wall an open, a glassed-in area, and in front of that area is the grand piano. And it has a little sign on it that's very Midwestern and polite that says, "Anyone is welcome to play as long as you think people will enjoy it." So my husband and I had been through much of the clinic, and we had talked to the doctors who were getting ready to leave when we were in the atrium, and a man in emergency room scrubs, green scrubs, sat down at the piano and began playing the Moonlight Sonata. And he really played beautifully, just incredibly beautifully. So Vincent and I stopped to listen to him, and when I looked behind him in this glassed-in area, there was a little boy running in the wind with his arms stretched out, the way little boys run, but his head was bald. He was a cancer patient, and there are a lot of those children at Mayo. And that whole event, the man playing the Moonlight Sonata in operating room scrubs, this little boy in such a delicate state running in the wind, seemed to me to have everything about life in it in one moment. And Vincent and I looked at each other, and we had, all of that in it, the grief and the fear and the fragility of life, and also our gratitude all at once.
Quite an experience. You wrote about it so beautifully in your book. It moved me. Now, I found the Mayo Clinic's handling of patients, you've said, both efficient, humane, and effective. And you did go back for a second visit, And that is when you finally, after seeing so many doctors and going through so much, you got a diagnosis. Now, I won't tell our listeners what it was, but weren't you finally relieved to get a diagnosis? I know I would have been delighted, finally.
Yes, I think it's so important that you have a word for what is wrong with you. With a lot of autoimmune disorders especially and many other illnesses, the doctors can't figure it out and they can't quite put a name on it. And people were trying at that point to convince me that I should live with that situation. And I knew that I might have to, but I also knew that if I had a real diagnosis, I would be able, it would affect me. And I didn't know how it would affect me, but it did. It made me clear. I mean, all of the concerns and worries that you spend your 3 o'clock in the morning time on disappear. And also, it's much better for your doctors. My doctors changed dramatically when they had a diagnosis. They were more confident. They were more focused. They were clearer about what their job was. All of that, I think, is unpredictable, but really, in my case, very helpful.
That's Nora Gallagher in conversation with Carol Marks, talking about her experience at the Mayo Clinic. She's a best-selling author. The book is published by Knopf, and it's called Moonlight Sonata at the Mayo Clinic. It's an honest, lyrical portrait of illness and the way it changes life and faith. Nice job, Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. If you're interested in the adventures of Carol Marks, in her experiences, her interviews, her commentaries, and archives of some of the best installments of A Touch of Gray, visit the website atouchofgray.com. And Gray is spelled with an E. It's atouchofgray.com, and Gray is spelled with an E. We'll be joined in the next segment by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. And he's got plenty to say and some interesting conversations coming your way when A Touch of Gray continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined for the rest of the way here in our two-hour get-together by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. And Richard will be talking with Dr. William Schaffner in the next segment about what to do to prepare for the flu and some breakthroughs in terms of pharmaceuticals that are designed to help you do just that, avoid the flu. But right now, Richard, I have to tap into your sports knowledge as one of the great sports talk show hosts in radio today. And I've been watching a lot of baseball with the playoffs, and this past week, of course, the World Series kicking off. And, I watch a lot of baseball, so a lot of the things that I see, you know, I'm used to. But when you watch with somebody who hasn't watched baseball a lot, particularly a fine lady, you notice that the baseball players do things that are quite, in some cases, disgusting, obnoxious, or just strange. Like, they have all kinds of twitches, tics, motions, weird rituals, and they do spitting, they do nose picking, they do butt scratching, they make weird faces. So, what's with baseball players? Are they neurotic? Are they just a bunch of dirty guys? Are they superstitious?
They're men.
They're men.
They're
men.
Men. Men. Men do these things.
Oh, come on.
Exactly. Men do these things, except there isn't a camera and they're not on national television.
Men spit every few minutes.
It just strikes me as strange that... Sure.
I go through my entire day never...
on yourself all day.
What? I spit?
You don't chew tobacco.
They don't chew tobacco either.
No, they don't chew tobacco. If you don't chew tobacco, you don't spit a lot.
No, they're not chewing.
But these guys chew tobacco.
I don't see them chewing tobacco. They're chewing sunflower seeds. And they're spitting them. Or they're chewing bubble gum.
Well, you spit them out. You don't eat the husks.
I don't know. Why do they have to eat?
I think baseball players are just randy young men in the prime of their masculinity, and they feel like laughing and scratching and doing whatever they want. They are physical beings. They perform physical acts for a living, and that's a manifestation of what they do.
Oh, I can't believe you're saying that. I am appalled. I am appalled. I do not scratch. I do not spit. And if I were eating, I wouldn't spit. I mean, football players don't spit. I mean, quarterbacks lick their fingers constantly, which is disgusting. But you don't see quarterback
players can't spit because they have face guards in front of them. You know, if you spit, you're going to wind up getting it on yourself because you got that mask.
I've never seen soccer players doing that.
How much soccer do you watch?
You know what I think it is? I think it's a self-perpetuating custom that kids grow up watching baseball players on TV spitting, scratching, and doing weird stuff, and they think that's what you do. So you go and you watch Little League games, and you see little guys spitting, and you see all that stuff because they think that's what you do. And they grow up, and they reach their 20s, and now they're on the field, and that's what they do. There's a preponderance of that kind of thing. Not to mention, let's put that aside, how about the hand clapping, the twitching, the touching of the hat, and don't tell me they're giving signals to the coach. Do you think that a lot of these weird tick-like behaviors are the result of superstition? Well, I've never heard so much silence.
But I think a lot of this stuff, I think you put your finger on it before, where sometimes when people do these things, it's a result of watching this behavior on television and emulating your heroes unconsciously. I don't think a lot of times they do it. For a little while, I used to play hockey, you know, just to pick up games and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself skating in circles around the red line. I found myself doing the things I saw professional hockey players do, not consciously, but unconsciously, because that's what you do.
Right. So that brings up another topic. There's a lot of topics in this topic, and that is, if young people emulate sports figures should be held to a certain standard based upon just the impact they have on the lives of young people, to set an example and not to, you know, go around killing people.
That's why I believe, especially in the case of tobacco, that they shouldn't chew tobacco, because we all know how injurious it is to your health. I mean, you can get cancer of the tongue, the jaw, all kinds of things.
But
it's very bad for you.
I don't think they
chew. And yet you see 23-year-old ball players chewing tobacco.
I don't think I've ever seen a ball player chew tobacco in years. Are you serious? They still chew tobacco?
Yeah.
I think they're chewing gum.
Absolutely.
Really? Are you serious? They chew tobacco?
Absolutely. They do. No question.
Even
young guys, 22, 23-year-old guys.
Chewing tobacco. Now, I thought I saw the other night in one of the dugouts a guy opening a pizza box. Now, I don't know if I imagined it. My wife said to me, what is that?
Was it with the Boston Red Sox where they were drinking beer and eating
chicken? No! I think it was the Detroit Tigers. Now maybe I'm wrong, but I thought
the owner of the team runs a pizza franchise.
I saw the guy. You should be able to check this out for me because you live in that world. I saw the guy in the dugout opening a pizza box. And I don't know, maybe that's where they keep their gear. But I couldn't imagine a guy eating pizza while he's, you know, in the dugout. I know that the Boston Red Sox were given a lot of hell for eating chicken and drinking beer, which is, you know, if they had won the pennant last year, nobody would have minded. But is it possible that they were eating pizza?
I seriously doubt it.
Really?
Seriously. It's like Rex Ryan, the coach of the Jets, advised the team prior to the Patriot game not to do anything for their wives, and I think the media read it as no sex for a week before the Patriot game.
With Rex Ryan,
and,
you never know.
A lot of people Well, a lot of people feel that that's good advice. That I just read a thing in Sports Illustrated where a former player, Nate Jackson, said that after having sex with his wife before a game, his legs felt like jelly and he couldn't perform.
Well, I think he has a bigger problem than indicated. Richard, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to your interview about the flu, and then we're going to come back with the final segment of our program. Michael Harrison here. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and now, as promised, here's our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation with Dr. William Schaffner. He's the immediate past president of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases and professor of medicine and preventive medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. He's going to talk to Richard about the first flu vaccine manufactured using cell-based technology to be approved by the FDA. It's called Flucilvax.
Doctor, what are the experts predicting vis-a-vis flu this year? Does it look like it might be a particularly bad one?
So, Richard, what we predict is that there will be flu. We don't know whether it's going to be mild or severe, but there will be flu in our communities that will make people sick. And we ought to remember, this is the virus that can take a healthy person and put them into the emergency room in 48 hours. So we have to take it seriously, and fortunately, there's an abundance of vaccine out there, and it's there in different varieties, so we should all get vaccinated now.
Now, I know in the past that was not always the case. We ran short of vaccine. What is it that is different about it this year? Did we prepare a little bit earlier or a little bit better?
Well, the manufacturers are getting increasingly better, and my hat's off to them, and they're able to deliver the vaccine in quantity earlier, and it's abundantly available in pharmacies, doctors' offices, clinics. So we should all take advantage of it because we want to be protected before the virus starts doing its dirty work in our communities.
Doctor, are there any particular groups that are at risk more than others?
Well, the recommendation is, for starters, that all of us 6 months and older should get vaccinated each year, but the groups that we have special emphasis on are people age 65 and older. They get real complications. People who have underlying heart disease or lung disease, diabetes, and then, very importantly, women who are pregnant. It's not generally known that if a pregnant woman gets flu, she has the same risk of complications as a senior citizen. So the vaccine is safe. You protect the woman. And here's a bonus, Richard. The woman makes protection, and some of that crosses the placenta, gets into the baby, and the baby, in its first 6 months of life, has advantage of that protection also. So that's like a bonus.
Yeah, and that can be very important. Now, in the past, people have been afraid, well, you know, if I get this vaccine, I might come down with a mild case of the flu. Is that urban legend?
Yeah, that's hooey. You can't get flu from the flu vaccine. That's something we don't have to even consider. So put that out of your mind, that you shouldn't use that as an excuse not to get vaccinated.
People are concerned, and I'm sure you're very aware of some of the big celebrities that have talked about vaccinations for other things, and they're a little bit concerned about that. What are the side effects? Are there any serious side effects that people need to be aware of?
Well, the so-called side effects that are common are a bit of a sore arm for an hour or two or three. 1% of people, a very small minority, get a degree of fever for a day. So influenza vaccines are extraordinarily safe. We give them in the hundreds of millions of doses around the world annually. We'd like to give more so that we can prevent even more of this serious infection.
Now, have the flu shots evolved? Is there anything new in terms of this year's flu shot versus last year?
Ooh, I'm glad you asked, because we have a variety of influenza vaccines available today. And one of the newest is a state-of-the-art manufacturing process in cells rather than in chicken eggs. And this cell-based product is antibiotic-free and preservative-free. And, you know, in times of an epidemic, it's nice to have this option because it can produce vaccine rapidly to protect us. So it's nice to have this option in the United States.
Now, a lot of us see signs on our local drugstores, flu vaccines being given today. If we wanted to go for this cell-based vaccine, is there a specific place we can look or something we can insist on? What do we call it?
Well, call it cell-based vaccine and the cell vaccine, and it's rather widely distributed today. So ask your provider if they have it. The important thing is to get vaccinated. So use the vaccine that your provider's got.
Okay, and there is a website. It's Flu Cell Vax, and that cell is with 1L, vax.com. And what kind of information can we get on that website, Doctor?
Oh, all the information you want about the vaccine, how it's manufactured, its doses, who's eligible, safety characteristics. It's a very informative website.
Yeah, and the vaccine is relatively inexpensive now. In fact, a lot of health plans do cover it. I don't know, with the Affordable Care Act taking place, it actually doesn't kick in until a little bit later if that'll be covered. I assume it will be, but it is a fairly minimal cost, is it not?
Well, you know, cost varies, but you're exactly right. Most health care plans cover influenza vaccine. Certainly Medicare does and Medicaid. So there's a lot of coverage out there.
All right. Dr. Schaffner, thank you so much for joining us and giving us all the information we need about the flu. Thank you.
Thank you, and get vaccinated and do it quickly.
That's Dr. William Schaffner in conversation with Richard Neer. If you'd like more information, go to the website flucelvax.com, and here's how it's spelled, FLUCELVAX.com. That's FLU, flu, FLUCELVAX, flucelvax.com. AtouchOfGray.com. Richard Neer returns for some final words. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray continues in just a moment.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're going to rejoin our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, for the final segment of our two-hour get-together here. Richard, before your conversation with Dr. Schaffner about the flu, we were talking about the habits, the eating habits, the spitting habits, and the scratching habits, and the twitching habits of baseball players. And then the question came up of whether or not I was having a mirage or a delusion or some kind of a hallucination that I saw a baseball player opening a pizza box in the dugout. Didn't Mark Sanchez of the Jets, I think last season or the season before, wasn't he caught on video eating a burrito or a hot dog during a game? And that had there was a whole controversy about that.
Yeah, he was eating a hot dog on the sideline. They were ahead in the game, and it was considered to be disrespectful to the opponent because the game wasn't over, and here he is noshing down on a post-game snack before the game was over.
And that's considered to be disrespectful. Or how about disrespectful to the fact that you're an athlete and you don't want to have a hot dog bouncing around in your stomach while you're running around on the field?
Well, does it really matter, though? I mean, we see golfers all the time having a sandwich, you know, when they're between holes or they're drinking something, they're eating an orange. So I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, sometimes your blood sugar's a little low. You want to give it a boost.
Mm.
Nothing wrong with a little snack between periods.
Do you remember when you were a kid seeing Major League Baseball players sitting in the dugout smoking? I think I've seen that.
My biggest shock was in 1970. This was my first time covering a sporting event, and I actually got to go in the Mets dugout.
Wow.
And interview a player prior to a game.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't say who it was, but it was a guy that starred in the World Series the year before and went on to become a sportscaster. But he was sitting in the dugout prior to the game, smoking a cigarette with a cup which looked very much like beer in his hand.
And was that a day that he was playing?
He was, I don't know if he was in the starting lineup that That's night, but,
right,
you know,
right.
He could have been used as a pinch hitter. He
right.
could have been in the starting lineup, but
yeah.
It was, I was shocked. I said, you smoke? And he looked at me like, yeah, kid, what do you think I am, a eunuch?
Right, right. That's wild. That is wild. Taking it back to the original point, because we've spread out all over the place with this, and it's just funny talking about the habits of athletes who, you know, whether they're role models or not. Just some of the nervous maneuvers that you see, the actions on the part of baseball players. We talked about some of it as they're emulating people they've seen, but aren't a lot of these weird moves just acquired superstitious rituals that they pick up over the years based on what they think works and doesn't work toward bringing them good performance?
I think it's a lot of nervousness. Like in radio, we have what we call verbal crutches, where we say things like, you know, or I mean, or to be honest with you, or things like that. And I think they have their little tics similar to that. If you remember Nomar Garciaparra, how he would step out of the box after every pitch and adjust his gloves and twist his wrist and go through this whole ritual, tip the bill of his hat. Mike Hargrove was called the human rain delay because he would do mm-hmm. things like that. It's just kind of habits that guys get into, nervous little tics, and we all have them in our various professions, but they're not as noticeable because we're not on TV all the time.
Well, you seem to feel that the TV magnifies things that everybody has. I tend to think the TV reveals a lot of weird things these guys have that the rest of us could not get away with. Well, we shall let us agree to disagree. Richard, thank you so much for bringing your insights to the program and for joining us. Thank you, Richard Neer. Thank you, Beverly Santanello, our producer on the front line. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host of the program. Thanks, Steve Wiseman, the entire Touch of Grey team. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here on this great talk radio station for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.